All right, we are starting the second half of Sefer Yehoshua today. We are going to try to get through, my goal is to get through the chapters 13 through 17. Wow. As I said, this second half we're doing from the from an aerial view, because we're not going to get too bogged down in names. But there's a couple of very subtle and very interesting stories embedded inside all of these lists of names of cities. So the trick is to kind of siphon away all of the technical detail and get to what is at the heart of a number of very interesting stories. So let's start from the beginning in chapter 13. We actually read the beginning of this parak last week, in which there is a list of all of the areas in the land of Israel that is yet unconquered, but it remains yet uninhabited and or unsettled. Let's just go back to the beginning quickly for a quick recap. Yeshua is a came by Yamin, by Yomer Hashem Elav, Ataza Kanta Bata by Yamin, by Aretz Nishara Habem Od Levishta. Yeshua is old, and the land has remained much unconquered. Zot Aretz Hanish Aret. The land, the areas that are yet unconquered. Kol gvilot haplishtim b'chol hagishurim. The area of the plishtim and the area of the gishur. I'll show you what the gishur is in a moment. Min hashichor asher pnam mitzrayim ad gvul ekon tzafon alaknani techasher chomesh yitzani plishtim. You have the areas of the plishtim. Come join us. Come a little closer. There's a table right over here. If you take a look at the map, the series of maps that I just gave you, this is actually taken from a very interesting book. And the Atlas Karta does all the maps for the Das Mikra series in Tanakh. And a number of years ago, they published an English Bible Atlas, which has the advantage of being in English, of course, with all of the maps in English and some summary of it from the beginning of Tanakh to the end. It's very interesting. So these maps are actually taken from this book. And if you take a look at the first map, which is the map, looks very similar to this one that's up here, the coming of the Israelites. It's sort of the orange and yellow translates here into the gray and the white for the most part. If you take a look at the bottom left, you see where it says Philistines, that's the area of the Plishtim that's unconquered, that's not in Israelite control. And the area of the Geshur, if you look up in the upper right-hand side, right to the east of the Sea of Galilee, or also known as the Kinneret, you see where it says Geshur? That's the area of the Geshur. Area of the Bashan, what is today the Golan Heights and north into the area of Syria. What they do have is inside the dotted line. Okay.
The way that he translates is the
opposite. Don't think so.
That's how it photocopied, I think.
It's the gray. The gray area is in Israelite control. And the non-gray, the white, is not in Israel control. The specific areas of the Geshur and the Plishtim, and the next area mentioned, which is in Lebanon, if you take a look at the second side of that page, you'll see it sectioned off, so that in general geographic swaths, that's what the area, the broad area that's unconquered on this map. North here, Geshur, Bashan, this area here, Lebanon up here, Plishtim, Eretz Plishtim down here. So for the most part, this is the area controlled by the Canaanites, and this was the area that Yehoshua had conquered directly. The southern campaign into the area of Har Yehuda, the northern campaign into the area of Hare Shomron, and essentially the area of the lower Galil, Emek Israel. And even there, as the text continues and tells us, that there are large areas within that region that are also unconquered. The rest of this parak describes the territory taken by Reuven, Gad, and half of Manasseh on the east side of the Jordan. So this is a recap. Remember that this section of Yeshua is going to go through the land of Israel, border by border, tribe by tribe. So even though Yeshua's role dealt specifically with the west side of the Jordan, Moshe had conquered the east side of the Jordan, if we're recapping who's settled where and whose territory is where and what the borders are, that recap has to start with Reuven, Gad, and half of Manasseh. So if you go down to Pasuk Zayin, V'yata chalek et ha'aretz hazot b'nachala l'tishat ha'shvatim v'chatzi ha'shevet ha'Manasseh. Now take what remains of this land and divide it up amongst the 9.5 tribes remaining, namely all the tribes outside of Reuven, Gad, and half of Manasseh. Imo ha'reuveni v'hagadi lakhu nachalatam asher natan lehem Moshe be'ever ha'yarden mizracha kasher natan lehem Moshe eved Hashem. The 2.5 tribes of Reuven and Gad, or two tribes, Reuven and Gad, half of Manasseh as well, but for now Reuven and Gad, they took their tribal territory east of the Yarden. Me aroer asher osfat nachal Arnon ve'ir asher betoch hanachal v'chol ha'mishor med v'adivon v'chol ha'sichon melech ha'mnei asher melech b'cheshbon l'gvul b'nei Amon v'hagilad v'gvul ha'gishuri v'ma'achati v'chol ha'echemon v'chol ha'bashan v'ad salcha kol mamlechut og b'bashan asher melech b'ashtuot b'dvei hu nishar miyater ha'refa'im me'akem miyoshe v'yorishem. I ran through those four psukim because they are the borders and the boundaries from Arnon through the Bashan. Just lists the areas. Aroer, Arnon, Yavok, Yarmok, Edrei, Hermon, all the way up north. This is the area of Sichon and Og. It was conquered by Moshe and given to the tribal territories of Reuven, Gad, and, as we'll see, half of Manasseh. And when it gets to the nitty-gritty of details of cities, for now I'm going to skip them because we're not, unless they're relevant to the story. Pasuk Yud Gimel, v'lo harishu b'nei Yisrael et ha'gishuri v'et ha'ma'achati. But in this sequence of east of the Yarden, from Reuven up north, the area that was not conquered was the area of the Geshur. Not conquered, I shouldn't say, not settled. Was in the north. V'yeshev Geshuru ma'achat bekerev Yisrael ad hayom hazeh. And therefore, the indigenous population of the Geshur are still there and have not been their territory is in their control. Rak l'shevet ha'levi lo natan nachala ishe Hashem malkei Yisrael hu nachalato kasher diber lo. If you add 9.5 and 2.5, you get 12, but there are 13 tribes. You know that there are 13 tribes, right? We've been through this, right? You're aware of the fact that there are 13 tribes. No. Yes.
You did say that.
I did say that on occasion. There are 13 tribes. There are only ever 12 at any given time, but there are in fact 13. Why? Yaakov has 12 children. Those are the 12 tribes. Yosef gets split into Ephraim and Manasseh. Each one has his own Nachala. That's the bracha to Yosef. Yosef is the Bechor, gets Pishnayim, gets the double portion. So he gets two. So now how many tribes are there in total?
13.
Why are there only ever 12? Because it depends what you're talking about. If you're talking about the sons of Yaakov, there are 12. If you're talking about the tribal division of the land of Israel, there are also 12, because Levi doesn't get a Nachla. And that's what the text is explaining. So there are only ever 12. I got 9.5, I got 2.5, then I got Levi. So how did I get 12? I got 12 because Levi doesn't get a portion. They got a whole bunch of cities scattered in all the portions. So depending on what the context of the conversation is, there'll always be 12, but it depends on which 12. If Levi is included, Yosef is counted as one. If Levi is not included, if Yosef is included as Ephraim and Manasseh, Levi is not counted. Pasuk Tet Vav, Vayiten Moshe. This is background. This is history. This is going back to the east of the Jordan. Vayiten Moshe lemateh b'nei Reuven lemishpachatam. How do I know that this is background in history and not presently happening in the days of Yeshua? Right, because Moshe is not alive. Correct. Vayiten Moshe lemateh b'nei Reuven lemishpachotam. Moshe gave Reuven their portion, and their portion, according to the families, is as follows. Vayilahem hagvul. This is their border. These are their boundaries. Their boundaries are Me aroer asher osfat nachal Arnon. I need a pointer. Everybody see this map?
Is this too far away?
No, our eyesight is terrible.
You're making a general statement.
Okay, this is Nachal Arnon. These two rivers are important to note. These two rivers are, there are three rivers actually, the Arnon River, the Abok River, and the Yarmouk River. These three rivers cut the area east of the Yarden into three parts. Not quite geographically by tribe, but geographically by region. So you have the area of Sichon and Og, the lower Gilad, and the upper Gilad, and the Bashan. So now it's going to go through the names of the cities, Aroer, Cheshbon, Edrei, Ashtarot. It's going to go through the names of the cities. These cities lie in the boundaries here. The area conquered by Moshe, which belonged to Sichon, that was given to the tribal territories of Reuven and Gad, is the area between the Arnon River and the Yabok. The area north of the Yabok into the Bashan was the area conquered from Og, Melech HaBashan. Remember that story? That's in Parshat Chukat, so it's coming up. Don't remember, you can review it in a couple of weeks. Vayihi lehem hagvul me aroer asher asfat nachal Arnon, from Aroer on the boundary of the Arnon River. Ve'ir asher b'tocha nachal v'chol ha'mishor al medva cheshbon v'chol areh asher b'mishor. Just names of cities that come to that may be familiar to us from the stories. Cheshbon, Divon u'bamot baal u'bet baal b'mon v'yatzo u'kdeimah u'mufa'at וקרייתיים וסיבמה וצלת השחר בהעמק ובית פאור ואשדות ואשדות הפסקה ובית הישימון וכל הרי המישור וכל ממלכות סיחון מלך אמור יש המלך בחשבון. All of the names of the cities. I'm not going to spend time now getting into which cities are where. All of the cities taken from סיחון, king of חשבון. אשר היכם משה אותו ואת נשיאי מדיין, את אבי ואת הרקם ואת הצור ואת חור ואת רב ונשיחי סיחון יושבי הארץ. Them and the tribes of Midian that Moshe conquered as well. And if you remember in the context of the story of the war with Midian, ve'et Bil'an ben Bo'or ha'kosem hargu b'nei so b'charev et chalaleim, el chalaleim. When they went to war with Midian, they also killed Bil'am the sorcerer. Ve'hi gvul b'nei Reuven ha'yarden u'kvul zot nachalat b'nei Reuven l'mishpuchatam he'arim v'chatzlehem. All of this up to the Yarden was the tribal territory of Reuven, up through Cheshbon. Tribal territory of Reuven between the Arnon and Cheshbon and to the river, all taken from Sichon.
Vayiten Moshe lemate Gad, livnei Gad lemishpachotam, the border, the boundary of the tribal territory of Gad. Vayilhem hagvul, ya'azer b'chol areya Gilad b'chatzi eretz b'nei Amon ad aroer asher p'nei Rabba.
All of this area here.
ומחשבון עד רמת הציפה המצפה ובתונים, וממחניים עד גבול דביר, ובעמק.
Go down to the end of Pasuk of Zion. וגבול עד קצה ים כנרת, עבר הירדן מזרחה, זאת נחלת בני גד למשפחתם. From חשבון to just south of the Kinneret. The Gilad is a round mountain range that cuts across like this. So the southern part of the Gilad was given to the tribe of Gad, this area here. north of it belonged to Menashe.
ויתן למשה לחצי שבט המנשה, ויהי לחצי מאתם בני מנשה למשפחתם, ויהי גבולה ממחניים כל הבשן from מחניים,
which is actually on the Yabok River, from here. God is a little further south. God comes up to here, but from the Yabok River, of the area of Machanaim, all the way up to the Bashan, into the Golan Heights. But of course, that territory for now was settled by, or belonged to? No. God goes essentially up to the Yabok River. He has a little slice of land north, but essentially he goes up to the Yabok River from the Yabok, which is the area of Machanaim. Anybody remember where Machanaim appears in Chumash? Machanaim plays a very interesting role in Chumash. Machanaim is the place where Yaakov comes back from the house of Lavan, and before he meets Esav, and he meets the angels on his way back at the end of Parshat Vayetze, and he sees the camp of the Malachim. Vayivgu'u bo Malachei Elokim, Vayom Yaakov Machane Elokim Zeh. This is the camp of God. Vayikra Shem HaMakom Ahu Machanaim. And he called the place the double camp. We just talked about the double camp of the angels and the army. Then he crosses over the river of the Yabok, and that's where he remains alone, and he fights with Esav. That's the Yabok, and that's where Machanaim is. So that's where Yaakov is when he meets with Esav. The next story after he fights with Esav is Yaakov comes to the city of... Where does Yaakov go after he finishes with Esav? Vayavo Yaakov Shalem Ir Shechem. Take a look from the Yabok River and cross due west, straight across, and you end up in Shechem. So you understand where Yaakov is going and how he enters the land or returns to the land. In the meantime, from the Yabok River up north is the to the Bashan is the area of Menashe. Most of it is controlled by the local Geshurites or Maachites or Canaanites.
Continuing in the text, Og, all of the area of Og Melech HaBashan, Pasuk Lamed, middle, V'chol Chavot Ya'ir Asher Bashan, Shishim Ir, there are 60 cities in an area called Chavot Ya'ir, in here, in this section here by the Kinneret. V'chatzi HaGilad V'Ashtarot V'Edrei,
half of the Gilad and the area of Ashtarot and Edrei, all the way out here, of course controlled by the Canaanites, but that is the area that is given to the Levnei Mechir ben Menashe lechatzi ben Mechir ben Mishpochatam, Ela shenechal Moshe bavot Moab me'eva hayaden Yericho mizvacha, ulishevet ha'levi lo natan Moshe nachala, Hashem alakei Yisrael hu nachalatam kasher diber lahem. That's the area of Menashe. Again, reiterating, Levi is not part of the picture. So, Perek Yud Gimel is essentially a recap of an entire chapter, or a couple of chapters, in Chumash and Sefer Bemidbar, specifically in Pashat Chukat, we have the boundaries of the land of Israel delineated, and then in Pashat Matot Masai, where Reuben and Gad come and ask to stay on the east side of the Yarden, Moshe divides the land that he conquered from Sichon and Og, and he gives it to those tribes. The area here between the Arnon and the Yabok, up to perhaps the area of Ramot Gilad, that's settled by Reuben and Gad and part of Menashe. We'll see that in detail in a moment. The rest of it remains in Canaanite hands.
Why is this also important to record each city and each movement?
You and I may not think it's important, but if you lived there... But if you lived there and you were dividing up the land of Israel, this is it. The Gemara says that if it had not been for the sin of Israel, for the sins of Israel, meaning had we not made mistakes at this point forward, we would have had the five books of the Torah and Sefer Yehoshua. And the part of Sefer Yehoshua that we would have had that was so significant is this, because that's it. The greatest treasure we were dreaming about is the land of Israel. Here's your map of who lives where.
This
which
like
cities,
yeah.
This is the deed, this is the contract, this is which cities belong to which tribe. If you belong to Reuven, you wanted to know which cities belong to Reuven. If you belong to God, you needed to know which cities belong to God. So
like
you
buy a piece of property, and they come out and they...
They survey it, and they, that's exactly right, and they give you all the details.
You could only live in the part that your tribe was...
Well, I mean, you could move around, but you'd be in somebody else's city. And you could go by, you could rent a house, etc., but you're not, this is, especially in an agricultural world, this is critical. We have a hard time with this parak and all of these prakim, only because we don't know the geography, we don't know the topography, nor do we know the cities. So that's our fault, not Tanakh's fault. So the question isn't, why is this important to record? The question is, why are we so removed from an understanding of the text? But the text, the value is there, because that's what the Torah wants. It wants us to settle in the land of Israel, to have these cities, and to know where each tribal territory is. The fault lies in us, not in the Tanakh, I think.
Is the topography ever explained by...
The topography will be relevant shortly. Topography will be relevant shortly. We know that there's mountains and there's valleys and and the topography plays roles in various ways. The fact that the Canaanites along the coast have chariots because the topography is different than the mountains. It had an impact on what we could settle and what we couldn't settle. The fact that there are certain areas that are mountainous and there are certain areas that are harder to settle than others will play a role. The topography also plays a factor.
The agriculture, everything.
It all, if you live there and it's part of your experience and you know the region, then this is your roadmap. Can't go anywhere without it. In St. Louis, a little less of a roadmap than perhaps it could be. Nonetheless, Perek Yudalid, the Eile Asher Nachalu Bnei Yisrael Be'eretz Knaan, Asher Nachalu Otan Elazah HaKohen V'Yoshua Binun V'Rashay Avot HaMatot Bnei Yisrael. That, up until now, has been the description of the east side of the Jordan. Now, the boundaries of the tribes on the west side of the Jordan, the previous chapter was divided, was given to them by Moshe. This section, namely the tribes and where they belong, is given to them by Yehoshua and Eleazar HaKohen in a very formal ceremony. We'll see the formality of that ceremony in chapter 18. But the Torah instructs Yehoshua and Eleazar HaKohen to divide the land by Goral, right, by some sort of form of lot, which they haven't done yet. They will in chapter 18. But to divide the land by lots, and to do so in a very public way. And this is a formal division of the region. Bigoral nachalatam, kasher tziva Hashem biyad Moshe, litishat hamatot b'chatzi hamateh. By Goral, by some sort of a lottery in the Mishkan, as Moshe was commanded by God. Why are there only 9.5? Again, ki natan Moshe nachalat shnei hamatot b'chatzi hamateh me'eva hayadein, because 2.5 are east, v'lalevim lo natan nachalat b'tocham. And the Levim aren't counted, so I only have 9.5. Every time it mentions how many, you have to go through the recap, because otherwise you ask the question, wait, what about there are 12? Aren't there 13? No, 9.5, 2.5, 1. Right? Just keep the numbers. Ki ayu b'nei Yosef shnei matot Menashe v'Ephraim. How did we get to 12? Because first of all, Yosef is two tribes, Menashe and Ephraim. V'lo netnu chelek l'alevim ba'aretz ki im arim l'shevet u'migrushahem l'miknehem u'l'kinyanam. And Levi doesn't get a land, they only get cities. As they were instructed, so they did. Here we go. Ready? Hold on to your hats. V'yikshu b'nei Yehuda Yehoshua b'Gilgal v'yom. Oh, we're not there yet. We have first a dialogue, conversation. V'yikshu b'nei Yehuda Yehoshua b'Gilgal v'yom v'elav. Yehuda comes to Yehoshua in Gilgal. Why Gilgal? That's base camp, correct. That's where they still are. They will stay there until chapter 18. V'yikshu b'nei Yehuda el Yehoshua. So b'nei Yehuda come to Yehoshua and they said, V'yomer elav Kalev ben Yefuneh HaKnizi.
Remember Kalev? Yeah. Story of the spies? Yeshua and Kalev? He's still around. Kalev ben Yefune. Haknizi. Why is it called Haknizi? His family is family of Knaz, which is one of the tribal subfamilies of Shevet Yehuda. Atay adat et hadavar shedibar shemot Moshe el Moshe ish elokim al odotai ve'al odotecha b'kadesh Barnea. Says Kalev to Yehoshua, hey, remember some 45 years ago when we stood in Kadesh Barnea and you and I went as spies and what God said about us? So here's the chronology. Ben 40 shana anochi bishloach Moshe eved Hashem oti mikadesh Barnea. I was 40 years old when God sent me as a spy in Kadesh Barnea. Liragelet haaretz. Va'ashev oto davar kasherim levavi, and I spoke my heart and responded accordingly. Va'achaya shoralu imihim sivet lev ha'am. He's reminding Yeshua of the whole story as if Yeshua needs reminding. Right? And my brothers, they were rebellious. Va'anochi mileiti acharei Hashem elokai, and I was loyal to God. Va'yishava Moshe b'yomohu lemorim lo ha'aretz asher darcha raglecha ba. Moshe promised me that the land in which I treaded then would be given to me as an inheritance. Because of my loyalty. Me'az, God has kept me alive these last 45 years. The chronology here is very interesting. I'll show you the chronology in a moment. From that point till today is 45 years. Today I'm 85 years old. Now I want my territory. And guess what? I'm as strong today as I was then. 85 years old, I'm as strong as I was when I was 40. I'm ready for war. Yata, t'nali et ahar hazeh asher diber Hashem b'yom ahu. Now I want the land that God promised me. Yata shemata b'yom ahu ki anakim sham. You know there are anakim there. Ve'arim gdolot p'tzurot, and there are great walled cities. You know because you were there with me. Olai Hashem oti v'horashtim kasher diber Hashem. God will be with me. I will conquer them. I will take my tribal area. Which tribal area are we talking about? The city of Chevron, where the Anakim were. Vayivacheu Yehoshua, vayiten et Chevron l'chalev ben Yifunel l'nachala. Yehoshua blesses him, and he says, "Not Chevron is yours." Alken hakach Chevron l'chalev ben Yifunel haknezi l'nachala d'ayom hazeh. Therefore, Chevron belongs to Chalev. Ya'an Hashem ileach v'ya Hashem elokei Yisrael, v'shem Chevron l'funim Kiryat Arba, ha'adam ha'gadol ba'anakim hu, v'art shakta mimuchama. Named Kiryat Arba because of the great Anak there by the name of Arba. Didn't know that, right? Everybody remembers Rashi, who says it was called Arba because of the four pairs. Medrash, text, distinguished between Medrash and text. Text says Kiryat Arba because it was the plains of Arba. Arba was the name of one of the Anakim who lived in the area of Chevron. And of course we have a way of taking words and making puns of them. And so Kiryat Arba became Kiryat Arba. And from the name of the giant to the names of the four pairs. Be that as it may, Chevron belongs to Kalev. Interesting chronology. A quick recap on the chronology. How old is at the point of the sin of the mission of the spies? How old is Yehoshua? 40. 40. Mm-hmm. Correct. Mm-hmm. After the when they're in the midbar for a number of years, then we get to Kibush Haaretz of the first half of Yehoshua. And now the beginning of the division of the tribes by Nachala, and Kalev is
85.
So all of this is 45 years. Correct? Now,
How many years are there exactly between the sin of the spies and the beginning of Yahushua? How long is this?
40 years.
That's the optical illusion. It's not 40 years.
38?
Correct. Why?
How do you know, Ruthie?
Why?
Didn't they...
Because it's 7 years for the conflict?
No, we haven't gotten there yet. Okay. This is the source for how many years this is. This is an unknown. It never tells us how long this is. We're going to source it in a moment. But how do I know that the mitzvah was 38 years? From the sin of the spies till Yahushua.
Because they were...
How many years are they in the Midbar in total?
Why are we told 40?
Well, because they were in the Midbar for 40 years. How many years in total were they in the Midbar?
40
years. But the sin of the spies was not immediately after Yitzhak Mitzrayim. The sin of the spies was in year 2. So from the sin of the spies until the days of, till the time of Yeshua, I have to take out from Yitzhak Mitzrayim till the story of the Meraglim, I have to take out 2 years. Which means that I now have the source for the exact number of years it took Yeshua to conquer the land of Israel. Because if Kalev tells me he's 85 now, and he was 40 at the sin of the spies, and I know that they were in the Midbar for 38 years after the sin of the spies, how many years is the first half of Sefer Yeshua? 7. So I have an exact source for what Chazal tell us, which is that it took Yeshua 7 years to conquer the land of Israel.
How did he get 7?
From Kalev's testimony that he was 40 at the sin of the spies and he's now 85. There are 45 years between the sin of the spies and today. Of those 45 years, 38 of them are in the desert. How much is 45 minus 38?
It's still 7.
7. That's the source. Now, the other half of it, which is that the number of years it took to divide the land was equal to the number of years that we conquered, that Gemara darshens from a pasuk. That's less concrete. But the 7 years to divide the land, that is very explicit. 7 years to conquer the land, that is explicit in Kalev's testimony.
That's not so long, is it? 7 years?
Well, from the first half of... Well, it took us 2 years to learn it. But...
If you're going to ask how long it took us to learn it,
that's it. It's okay. It took us less time to learn it than it took them to do it. From the beginning of Yeshua until the end of chapter 12 is 7 years. It's 4 campaigns, essentially. It reads like one event after another, but in fact, it takes place over time. Sorry, 1 second.
Tanakh, do we ever hear about Kalev ben Yefuna from the interim, from the Meraglim till here?
Nope.
So he's like out of the picture. Okay, it's interesting. Okay.
And it's 7 years to conquer this much of the land, right? Because it's not...
7 years to conquer what you see here.
Yeah. But he's not done.
Well, he's not done. That's... Now begins the second half of the next 7 years, which is each tribe's mandate to go and settle the area that they had conquered.
Do they help each other?
That's an interesting question. Do they help each other?
Oh, Ruthie, let's be realistic.
The answer to that question is yes and no. The answer to that question is yes and no. In theory, they don't have to help each other. The mandate is for each tribe to go and settle their tribal territory. They're in different parts of the country. In reality, you and I may think so. They didn't think so. In reality, only 2 tribes are recorded as having worked together. And that's not here in Sefer Yeshua. That's actually in Sefer Shoftim, where it says that Yehuda and Shimon made an alliance. Which makes a lot of sense, because Shimon doesn't have a tribal territory. Moshe took their tribal territory away from them. So Shimon has nowhere to go. So Yehuda and Shimon make a deal. Yehuda says to Shimon, you come and fight with me, and I'll give you a section of my land. And that's exactly what he does. They go, they fight together, and Yehuda gives Shimon 5 cities in the south of the area of Yehuda. Post or outside of the story of Yehuda and Shimon, we don't know of any tribal cooperation in the initial conquest. We do know of efforts in Sefer Shoftim, and that will be our next course of study, efforts in Sefer Shoftim to try to unite the tribes under one military banner again, an unsuccessful effort, an effort that becomes continuously less successful till the complete deterioration of any tribal affiliation in three or four different civil wars that take place in Sefer Shoftim. A reunification of the tribes doesn't take place until they build the first malchus. And the transition from tribal leadership to king leadership was essentially a way to go back to a kind of national leadership that you had in Yehoshua. Post-Yehoshua, when he sends each tribe to their own territory, all sense of national identity breaks down. From here we deal with tribal affiliation over national affiliation. There's no real sense of national identity, much more tribal.
Don't you think that's pretty difficult to get national unity once you've been divided?
Oh, absolutely. I think it was an enormously challenging task.
Right.
It took us hundreds of years to achieve it.
Right.
And even then, achieved on very shaky ground. It took us hundreds of years. But don't make the mistake of thinking that we were once united and now divided so tragically. We were essentially always tribes. We left Mitzrayim as tribes. And the reason why the Torah divides the camp of Israel into tribes is not an accident. We are more closely affiliated with our tribal identity at this stage, Reuven, Gad, Shimon, Reuven, etc., than we are with any sense of a national identity. That's just how the history of Bnei Israel developed. It doesn't, even though in theory the Torah wants us to be a nation, Lechet Kohanim V'Goy Kadosh, it takes us generations before we're able to break down the tribal tribal affiliation to the point where the...
You have the destruction, decomposing of the tribe before you...
100%.
Does Shimon get, lost? Do they kind of become part of Yehuda?
They don't get lost inside Yehuda. They do get lost, but they don't get lost inside Yehuda. What happens to them much later in Tanakh and Sefer Malachim is they begin to migrate. And they begin to migrate up north because they are drawn to the farmland of the north. And we find them later in the areas in the Galil, etc. And by the time the 10 tribes get exiled, they get exiled together with the 10 tribes. So they don't stay in the south, actually. Well, for Shimon, certainly, because Shimon had no Nachla. For the other tribes, less so. But remember, Shimon has no portion. We talked about that at all? Sure we did. Zot HaBracha, we didn't talk about Moshe's division of the tribes?
I think you did a little.
I think I did some Chastoa, if I'm not mistaken. I gave a Shimon for Zot HaBracha. After the story of Baal Peor, which was essentially this sin of Shimon, Moshe, when he blesses the tribes, doesn't give Shimon a Bracha. He's the only tribe who's missing in the list of tribes in the end of Chumash in Zot HaBracha. There's no bracha to Shimon. And the assumption is because his original portion was supposed to be here together with Reuven and Gad. Because that's the trio in the Midbar was Reuven, Gad, and Shimon. That was the camp. But after the sin of Baal Peor, Moshe took, which was essentially the sin of Shevet Shimon, Moshe took that territory away and he gave it to Reuven and Gad. That's the story of Pinchas. So that's the background to Shimon. Chapter 15. Chapter 15 is a detailed list of the area of Shimon itself and all the cities in Shevet Shimon. I'm going to skip that. I just want to check one thing quickly. Yehuda. Vayir gavala mateh b'nei Yehuda l'mishpochatam. It starts with Edom in the south, goes to Yam HaMelech, it just lists all the names of the city, Nachal Mitzrayim, goes by boundaries, and then it starts to list all the names of the cities themselves. I'm going to skip it all. Well, it's part of it's Negev, and part of it's the mountains all the way up to Yerushalayim. The boundary of Shevet Yehuda ends at the area of Yerushalayim, everything from Yerushalayim south. Within the center of the country, it's the largest single Shevet.
Yehuda.
And Yehuda goes and he takes his territory. Take a look. I'll do isolated psukim. Pasuk Yud Gimel. Ulechalev ben Yefuneh natan chelek betoch bnei Yehuda El Pi Hashem li Yoshua. God had instructed Yoshua to give Kalev his territory at Kiryat Arba Avi HaAnak Ki Chevron, the plains of Arba, the father of the Anak, which is Chevron. Vayorash Misham Kalev et Shlosha Bnei HaAnak, et Sheshai v'et Achiman v'et Tamai Yelidei HaAnak. And there he conquered the three sons of the Anak, Sheshai, Achiman, and Talmai. V'yal Misham Yoshvei Devir, then he went on to Devir. Gets to Dvir, and he has a very interesting story. This is an interesting little...
He's 85.
He's 85, and he's leading the battle.
Yeah, but he said he's just as strong.
Right.
That's right.
It only happened on.
Absolutely. Vayal Misham al Yoshve Dvir. Vishem Dvir lefanim Kiryat Sefer. Gets to an area called Kiryat Sefer. Vayomar Kalev. And then Kalev says the following. Asher yakeh et Kiryat Sefer ulechada venatati lo et echsa biti l'isha. Anybody who conquers Kiryat Sefer will win a prize. The prize being marriage with my daughter. I don't know how old the daughter is. Doesn't say.
He's 85.
Maybe he married late and she's young. Who knows? Vayilkada, who conquers it? Vayilkada Otniel ben Knaz, Achi Kalev. Otniel ben Knaz, Kalev's nephew. Knaz is Kalev's brother. Otniel ben Knaz, Achi Kalev, either his brother or his nephew or some relative of the same family, conquers the city. Vayiten lo et achsa bito leisha. And he marries Ichsa, the son of, Achsa, the daughter of Kalev. Otniel ben Knaz has a claim to fame besides this little vignette. Namely, anybody recognize the name?
He's related.
So he marries a cousin. That's not a problem. But what's the other claim to fame of Otniel ben Knaz?
I don't know, but there's a place Otniel in Israel.
Otniel, yeah, that's true. But that's named after Otniel, but that's not the... Otniel ben Knaz's claim to fame is in Sefer Shoftim. He is the first in the list of Shoftim. So here you find the bridge, one of the bridges, between the end of Sefer Yehoshua and the beginning of Sefer Shoftim. Vahi bevo'ah v'tisiteu lish'om me'et avia sadeh. Now here's the vignette. She comes to her father, Achsa, comes to her father Kalev. V'titznach me'al hachamor, she gets off the donkey. V'yomer la Kalev malach. And Kalev says to her, what's up, my daughter? So she says, Atomer, t'na li bracha. I want a bracha. What's the bracha? Who asked me about the Negev? Ki eretz ha-Negev nitatani. You've given me the Negev, which is essentially desert. V'natata li gulot mayim. I want water. I want springs. I want fertile land. I don't want the desert that I can't do anything with. So he gave her some area which also had underground springs from which she could then go and irrigate her fields so that she could grow and do something with the land which he had given her. Little vignette inserted into the middle of the story. What's the point of it? A list of cities and tribes and division and territory. Why do I need? What's the message of this little vignette about Achsa bat Kalev?
It's still kind of flexible.
Partially the flexibility of who got what. What else could we learn from this story?
Inheritance to daughters.
Inheritance to which we'll see in a moment is irrelevant to the next part as well, because we're going to recap the story of the five daughters of Tzlofchad, which is also in the next part of the story.
She's pretty gutsy.
And she's very gutsy.
Because this is all her idea. She urges her husband.
She comes to her father, and she says, I want. What do I want? I want land. What do you want to do with land? I want to grow things. What are you going to do? How are you going to grow it? It's a Negev. Water. Give me some underground springs, and I'll grow in the Negev. She's very modern, very technologically outspoken. But what you get from it is a sense of a tradition in this family that runs from Kalev to her daughter, to his daughter, which is a tradition of an embrace of the land and an embrace of the commitment to settle the land.
She wanted to do something with it.
Correct.
But also, isn't it like, look how he came after so many years and claimed his...
And that's the theme of Shevet Yehuda. When Yoshua sets out the mission, tribe by tribe, okay, folks, go and conquer. Who's first on the list? Yehuda. Who runs to Yoshua and says, I want my land? Kalev from Shevet Yehuda. Who says, I want to settle and grow my land? Achsab bat Kalev from Shevet Yehuda. And you get this sense of this from the, in betwixt and between all the list of cities and borders, that this is a tribe that when the flag was raised to go and conquer and settle their territory, this was a tribe that jumped first.
Right?
They're always jumping first. Nachshon ben Aminadav is also jumping first. they're ready to go.
But it's interesting, it's inherent in Yehuda. In other words, like the other Shvatim could have,
I don't know, do we know?
Well, we'll see it in one or two others, but it's in direct contrast to... We'll see it in Menashe and Ephraim too. But Yehuda, Menashe and Ephraim, which are the three stories up to Perek Yudchet, will stand in stark contrast to the rest of the tribes whose Nachla is described after chapter 18. Chapter 18 is this transitional point. It's the watershed point. So the text divides up this whole section of the division of the land of Israel by tribes, divides up into essentially two halves. Those tribes that jumped, Yehuda, Menashe, Ephraim, that desired, that wanted, that loved the land, that you see it in their actions. And those tribes were sitting in Gilad and waiting for something to happen to them, which will essentially be the rest of the tribes. Which would explain something else if you look at this map carefully. Yerushalayim south is Yehuda. Mm-hmm. Yerushalayim north is Binyamin. We'll get to Binyamin in a moment. Ephraim and Menashe.
The rest.
The rest of it is from Emek Yisrael north. What's the difference between what's below my hand and what's above my hand? It's much more orange below. No, that's exactly right. This was essentially a success story. This was essentially a failure. Right, these are the tribes that jumped at the charge to go and settle, and these are the tribes that had to be pushed and prodded. You can see that visually. It's a remarkable story.
But as far as the topography, was the Menashe and Yehuda, were those better areas to settle? I mean, like agriculture or anything, or mountains was the other one? No difference.
No. The only one that had a topographical challenge was Dan, because they're on the coast. But otherwise, they're all in the mountains or the valleys, all the way through. Okay. Let's go on to, we're in the middle of Perek Tetvav. I'm going to run through, yes, that's what we're up to. We're up to the story of Achsa, Pasuk Chaf, Zot Nachalat Mateh B'nei Yehuda L'Mishpachotam, V'ayu He'arim Mikzeh L'Mateh B'nei Yehuda L'Gvul Edom. Now it goes to the list of cities. It just names the cities. Kafzeel, Eder, Yagur, Kina, Dimona, Adada, some of them cities, you know, it's interesting to read them, even if you don't necessarily know where they are, because some of them you'll hear are modern cities today, like Dimona. Kedesh, Chatzor, Yitnan, it's a different Chatzor than in the north. Zif, Telem, Alot, Chatzor, Chadata, Kiryat, Chetzron, some of the cities repeat themselves as well. Amam, Shema, Molada, no. Go down to all the way till the end. Go down to Pasuk Samach. Excuse me? Somewhere in the south. Oh, Tziklag is the hometown of David HaMelech when the Amalek come and conquer, kidnap his wife and children. The end of Sefer Shmuel. Pasuk Samech, Kiryat Baal, he Kiryat Yarim, Vaharaba, Arim Shtaim, Vachatzrehen, Amidba, Bet Arava, Midin, Uschacha, Vahanivshan, Vir Hamelech, Vengedi, Arim Shesh, Vachatzrehen. Recognize Engedi, I'm sure. And here you get to one of the most interesting psukim of all. Ve'et Hayevusi, Yoshve Yerushalayim, Lo Yachlu Bnei Yuda Lohorisham. Vayeshev ha'yivusi et bnei Yehuda b'Yerushalayim ad hayom hazeh. The Jebusites in Yerushalayim, that Yehuda couldn't conquer. So they stayed there. So what essentially is the summary of the story of Shevet Yehuda's conquest? What's the summary? They basically got everything except Yerushalayim. Which tells me that Yerushalayim belongs to Shevet. Yerushalayim belongs to Shevet Yehuda. Correct. That's going to be an interesting issue when we see the story of Binyamin. So leave it, park it in the back of your mind. That's Shevet Yehuda. Perek Tzayin. Ve'etzeh ha'gora livnei Yosef. Mi'arden yirechol li'imei yirechol mizracha. The east side of the... the west side of the Yarden is belongs to that is the tribal territory of Yosef. Hamidba olemi richo bahar Beit El veitzemi Beit El luzu ve'avar gvul ha'arki atarot ve'yarad yama el gvul ha'yafliti ad gvul Beit Chon tachton ve'ad Gazer ve'yutotzatav yama ve'inchalu b'nei Yosef v'nashev Ephraim. Story of Yosef is from the Yarden all the way west. Ephraim and Menashe across the heartland of the mountain range, north of Beit El, from Beit El in the south to a little further to the north of Shechem, all the way across belongs to Yosef, divided into Menashe and Ephraim. Vayinchalu b'nei Yosef and Shevi Ephraim. Vayugvul b'nei Ephraim mishpuchatayim, and it tells us the boundary of Ephraim, and then it will tell us the boundary of Menashe. And it gives us the cities. Atarot, Yericho, Yaden Yetzah Yaden, Mitapuach, on and on and on. Skip to Pasuk Tet, Veharim, Hamivdalot, Livne Ephraim, Betoch Nachalat, Bnei Menashe, Kol Arim, Vechatzahem. There's a series of cities of Shevet Ephraim that are inside Shevet Menashe and back and forth. Boundaries in those days. Boundaries in Tanakh are not lines on a map. One of the reasons why this chapter is so long-winded is because if you were dividing a boundary today, you wouldn't write it like this. If you were dividing a boundary today, what would you do? You would take a point on the map and point A, and you would take a point B, you would identify those two points, and you would draw a line. There are no lines drawn here, because in Tanakh, there's no such thing as a boundary based on a line. A boundary is based on a city. The city belongs either to one tribe or to another. The territory in between cities is irrelevant and therefore not identified. So in addition to the points of the corners of the boundary, the Tanakh has to tell me the names of every city in that boundary because the cities are scattered. Take a look for a moment. If you look at the maps of the tribal divisions that I've given you,
that's why everything's always listing all those cities.
Right. That's what I'm saying. That's why the Navi goes and lists all the cities. He lists all the cities because the boundary is irrelevant. It's the cities that are given to each tribe. We don't know if the walled city. There's no wall around the whole boundary. They're just cities.
Right.
They could be walled. They could not be walled, depending on the city. Those are the cities that were given to this tribe versus the cities that were given to another tribe, and they don't necessarily follow a consistent pattern, because you'll find that even though we draw a line, so for example, on this third page map, where you have Judah in the south, you have Binyamin in the middle, you have Ephraim and Manasseh north of Binyamin, and you have a line drawn, crooked, ragged, jagged line, that's an arbitrary line. That's we're drawing a line between the cities, but what the Navi mentions are all the border cities. And sometimes not even border cities. Sometimes you'll have a name of one city that's inside the tribal territory of another, because that city was given to a different tribe. And it didn't bother anybody, because there are no lines drawn. They're just cities that are divided up. But the end of this parak is interesting. Pasuk Yud, V'lo harishu et ha-kna'ani ha-yoshev b'gazer. V'yeshev ha-kna'ani b'kerev Ephraim ad ha-yom hazeh v'hi lemas oved. What they were unable to do was to take the city of, the area of Gezer. Gezer is right here. The yellow. Yellow little enclave inside this orange. Right, you see the area of Gezer? That they're unable to conquer. Probably because that's where the end of the mountain range begins and the beginning of the coast, and that's where the Canaanites already begin to have chariots that are a bigger challenge for them militarily. But they're not able to take Gezer. And so the Canaanites stay in Gezer as a Canaanite enclave inside the tribal territory of Ephraim.
When they say Ad ha-Yom Hazeh, what are they referring to?
Until the time of the authorship of Sefer Yehoshua. Or maybe the time of the authorship of Sefer Shoftim. Because these chapters overlap with Sefer Shoftim.
Which is what time? What period? No, in numbers.
When is Yeshua? I don't know. I can't remember dates. But Yeshua's 40 years after Moshe. With Yeshua's whole story is 15, 20 years long. Maybe. Okay, last chapter for today is chapter 17. Vayi Hagoela Matei Menashe. Next in line, after Ephraim comes Menashe, Ki Hu Becho Yosef, he's the firstborn. And it's interesting, even though he's the firstborn, which Shevet is described first? Ephraim. Goes back to the story of Yaakov, in which Ephraim and Menashe are reversed. And it's moving up, correct. Ephraim is closer to Binyamin than is Menashe. That's also not an accident, but that we'll talk about later. I want to, at the very end, we'll take a look at where these tribes were set and how it came to be that way, why they were where they were.
So Ephraim and Menashe were always two tribes. They were Yosef. It's always Ephraim and Menashe.
When it comes to the division of the land of Israel, Yaakov splits them into two and gives each a portion.
Always referred to as two separate.
Correct. Once they come into the land of Israel, they each one takes a tribal area. From that point forward, that's where Yaakov's bracha was. Ephraim and Menashe ki Uven v'Shimon Yuli. Their status in the context of the history of Bnei Israel and the tribal division of the land will be equal to Uven and Shimon. Two tribes, two portions, two boundaries. Vahi ha'gorala matem menashe ki hu b'cho yosef l'machir b'chor menashe avi ha'gilad ki hu haya ish mechama v'ilo ha'gilad v'abashan. So now if we're already talking about Menashe, first of all we have to remember that Menashe has two portions. Makes sense given the fact that he's a b'chor. One portion east of the Yarden, the area of the Gilad. The second portion west of the Yarden, which is the area that Yoshua gave him. Vahi livnei Menashe ha'notarim l'mishpochotam, the remainder of Menashe, besides the ones that are in the Gilad, according to their families, Livnei Avi Ezer,
ולבני חלק, ולבני אסריאל, ולבני שכם, ולבני חפר, ולבני שמידה. אלה בני מנשה בן יוסף הזכרים למשפחותם. These are the names of the children of Menashe. So each one of these is going to get an area within the tribal territory of Menashe. ולצלופחד בן חפר בן גלעד בן מחיר בן מנשה לא היה לו בנים. Why do I need to know the names of the children of Menashe? It doesn't tell me the names of the children of any other tribe, because it wants to remind me of the story of Tzlofchad. Tzlofchad ben Chefer ben Gilad ben Machir ben Menashe. There's your Yichus. Had only daughters. Ve'ele shmot benotav, Machla v'no'ach ogla Milka v'tirza. Five daughters of Tzlofchad. Vatikravna lifnei Elazar Kohen lifnei Yoshua Benun lifnei Hanisim lemor. Those five daughters came to Yoshua and to Elazar, and they reminded them about the promise that God had given to, or that Moshe had given to their father. Lemor Hashem tziva et Moshe to them. Hashem tziva et Moshe letet lanu nachala betoch achenu. Moshe had promised, or God had promised to Moshe to give us a portion. And indeed, that's what he did. He gave them a portion of land. Otherwise, the division of land was always according to the male line, with the exception of if there were no males, then it went by the daughters. And they got 10 sets, 10 portions divided up. Five for the other sons and five for Benot Tzlofchad. Sounds like they not only got a portion, but they got a larger portion than anybody else. Now the boundaries. And we will go through all of the names of the cities. We're not going to read it through, but that's exactly what happens now. It goes all through the names of the bound of the cities up to the boundary with Yisachar. Cities inside the tribal region of Yisachar and Asher. He also has certain cities there. Tanach, Megiddo. Pasuk Yud Bet. V'lo yachlu b'nei Menashe l'orish et ha'arim ha'ela. These cities, Tanach, Megiddo, these cities inside the area here, the yellow, they were unable to conquer. V'yo'al ha'knani l'shevet b'aretz hazot. And the Knanim continued to settle in this land. And at some point or another, they're able to maintain, to extend military control or sovereignty over the land, but they're never able to remove the Knanites from their midst. This will become a thorn in their sides throughout Sefer Shoftim.
So in all three tribes, there remain...
Correct. What we will find is that the further into the story we get, the larger the area of the Canaanites is. Yehuda has a city, Yoshua, one city that's a problem for him, Yerushalayim. Ephraim had a city, or a region, Gezer. Menashe has a series of cities, Tanach, Megiddo, a series of cities. So now the area that they are unable to take is slightly larger. And as three provinces. And as the story progresses, the area of the Canaanites becomes larger, till the point where we're going to discuss later, when we get to, well not today, but another year, we'll get to Asher and Naphtali, where it'll say that the Israelites dwelt amongst the Canaanites, instead of the Canaanites amongst the Israelites. Right? You understand the question of numbers.
So this is,
correct.
So for Yehoshua, this is a very big problem, because, I mean, you hit in my
it won't be
Yehoshua. You kept saying is the walled cities and fortifying and the city. So if they don't have control of Yerushalayim,
Yerushalayim is a non-entity for them. Yerushalayim is a tiny little.
So it doesn't matter. You're saying
Yerushalayim is the least of their problems at this point. Yerushalayim is a tiny little city, Jebusite city. It's this big. The bigger area, it doesn't even warrant orange on the map. The bigger areas are the region of Gezer, the region of Tanach and Megiddo and the provinces, the area of the Galil, these large area of the coast, these large Canaanite areas will become a much bigger problem for them.
So
and
Sefer, those portions.
These are small. Now we're going to stop here. We are right at one of the most.
Stay tuned.
stay tuned. Right at the story of Yosef and the dialogue between Yeshua and Yosef, the end of chapter 17, and then ready to move into the chapter 18.
I heard on the news that